Darby, Danny, I have a question for you. Because about an hour ago, maybe two, I was standing on what I consider to be the most significant piece of American soil that is not part of like a war or a monument or something like that. Like something happened there. And you absolutely know where I was because I have family in town, and it's the same place everybody goes at this time.
Is that that thing in South America?
No, Danny, it's not. But I was there, by the way, surrounded by people that look like they're from all over the world. They go visit there as well.
Were you on the street or were you in Dealey Plaza?
I was on the grassy knoll. The other three from the party did have to go stand on the X and then looked like they cheated death as the traffic light turned. And then they all scurry out of the way as cars have no patience for people standing there. But what other place would there be in the, let's say, the continental 48?
American history as far as like a spot.
Like if you said this happened here, is that number one on the list in all of the 48? The only other one that seems to make sense, but this feels like recency bias, would be the World Trade Centers up there in New York. Although, yeah. You know what, that I think that stands any sort of recency bias, but
then you have to weigh, is one president dying at the hands of a gunman, does that equal a couple of thousand that died literally on live television in the other most horrific attack that we've ever had on these soils outside of Pearl Harbor?
And that, again, not belittling that.
I know.
But a sitting American president as part of a parade in a back of a convertible.
I agree. There is a discussion.
And is there something else that should be in the conversation? I guess Lincoln? Maybe in
Nebraska?
Ford Theater?
Oh.
No, not when they...
Just the city of Lincoln, Nebraska.
No, that wouldn't be significant enough to stand there. But is that the place? Like, what else compares to it?
Mount Rushmore? I don't even know.
That's man-made.
Oh, yeah.
He's talking about an event.
Or is it?
No, I think... I'm pretty sure that's man-made.
The Alamo?
Okay.
That's pretty big.
But now we're talking wars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you want to allow those in, maybe you have to talk about Appomattox or Gettysburg or Bunker Hill or something like that. So maybe that needs its own...
I think you're right. I think that there are two. It is the World Trade Center, or where they used to stand, and this. And there really is no argument. I'm trying to think of something in California.
What about...
But you know what? California was kind of, they were a late comer as a state, and not much wildly controversial has happened there outside of mudslides and fires and things like that.
Earthquakes,
yeah.
What about
stuff that happened at the Chateau Marmont?
The spot where the Dez catch happened.
That wasn't a catch, Bob.
So you're talking just Lambeau Field in general.
Well, the south end zone. I also where Bart Starr went in the Ice Bowl, probably.
Okay.
Same end zone?
You tell me.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I should know that. I think it is. I'm going to say it is.
In my brain, it looks like the opposite. Like the camera was on the other side of the field.
There's no way they could have moved cameras in 50 years.
No.
He's right.
Yeah, you were standing on it. Okay, here's the other thing, and I always say this to people who are coming in town, and I'm sure you've had people, Danny, family come in town, and I have too, that you take over there and you go to the 6-4 Museum and all that. Even though it is for sure the number one tourist attraction here, I still think it's underplayed and underrated.
Because it's weird. Like, it's an attraction.
What, did you feel sad down there?
No, until the dude in the street corner is trying to show you autopsy photos for $9.95.
Yeah, that's weird.
And he accepts Venmo.
They do, by the way.
I'll take whatever, man.
So do homeless people.
The parking guy would not accept a 20. He wanted either exact change or credit card. And
so did the family members, did they all appreciate where they were, or was it like boring?
No, I think
your city sucks.
I think they wanted to see it. We can find out from Bill in a couple hours, I suppose. But it is his wife, born in what year would you say? 1980, she's already looking at the dates on everything as that's when my parents were born.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is a decade before I was born, so I can get that. But, yeah, every passing year. In fact, I believe they had shirts in the gift store that were commemorating the 50th anniversary now of going to the moon, which they have attached to JFK because he, of course,
launched the space
wanted
program.
Everyone to go to the moon.
Not everyone.
And so that's 50.
Someday we will colonize the moon.
57 years later.
Are you sure we went to the moon?
No.
I am.
I'm not either.
I'm willing to say I'm sure.
Well, you're just confused about the height difference between...
It would be easier to get to if my calculations were correct.
Right. We all would have been on the moon by now.
All right. Well, send in your rankings.
And your resumes.
On top five places that you can stand in the United States. By the way, without charging admission even. That's a freebie.
That's true. Did you go to the museum?
We didn't have time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So I said, there's the window. There's the X. You want some ice cream?
He's clearly right. Not from here.
We have a first in the world of sports.
We must stop down and take a few moments to discuss one of our longtime colleagues and friends who we were very sad to learn yesterday had passed on to the next plane this past Saturday. This may or may not be a name that a lot of you know, but if you've been to a game at the new stadium, you have heard his work, because for some years, he has been the man at the PA out there. He is Roger Emmerich, a longtime friend of ours. In fact, Roger is one of the first guys that I met when I was breaking into the business back in the 80s. That's how far back he and I go.
He was one of the first guys that I met breaking into it in the 90s because he was always at stuff.
He is always at stuff. He's one of those guys who was everywhere. He knew everybody. Everybody knew him. I don't know if he knew everything, but he certainly knew his share of stuff. And he was the most awesome, most gregarious guy that you could possibly imagine. One of the most fun guys that I've ever run across during my time in the game. He always had a story and was always upbeat, always glad to see you despite the myriad of health issues he had run into over the last, I don't know, 10, 12 years or so. He used to be a man of considerable size, lost a lot of that some way, somehow. I don't know what the process there was or if that was because of his ailments or what.
How did he lose that, Ty? I
think he got the thumb stomach.
He did, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know. That may have led on to other things. But despite it all, if Roger ever had a bad day, nobody ever knew.
When did you meet him?
You know, it's funny. My first day at KRLD/Texas State Network, he was the Austin bureau chief for the network doing news, but he'd always wanted to do sports. Well, the same day I started in 1993 was his first day from Austin moving up to Dallas. So wow. That's how I met him. First day.
Yeah, I met him in the mid-90s when I first started up here, and they threw me on as one of the reporters on the Cowboy beat. So I'm always going out to practices, and I'm always covering games and stuff like that. And so the road trips at the time... You know, I wasn't very well traveled growing up and go to a lot of places, and I could not believe that I was getting to go to Chicago and New York and Washington and places like that I'd never been to before. Well, Raj had been doing that for a while and being on the Cowboy beat, and so one of the first times, I think the first game I ever went to was in Washington, first trip I ever took, and you get on the Cowboy charter, and I know we've told this story before, but it's worth repeating. When you get on there, you know, you're flying with the team, and they put the media in the very back, and we're all hanging out together. There's always a contingent of, I don't know, 12, 15 people back there. And you're yucking it up, and I sat next to Raj. And again, Raj was a man of size back then. And so the Cowboys, once you get there, there's like a sack of food sack that they give you. A huge sack
snacks,
of food.
Snacks, candy bars, full-size like candy bars.
Yeah.
Sandwich.
A huge sandwich. And, you know, me, if I'm given food, I'm eating food. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is magical. And I'm gnawing down on the sandwich, and Raj is sitting next to me the whole time. I'm eating a Kit Kat, you know, just shoving it. He's like...
Because you think you're never going to eat again on the road trip.
Exactly.
You got to eat it all.
And he goes, "Padna, that's fool's gold, what you're eating right now." I'm like, what? He's like, "They're about to serve the good stuff once we get in the air." I'm like, oh. And I didn't know that... You'd get a steak and lobster and anything else wanted when you're up in the air. And he's just sitting there watching me just shove food. The minute I sit in my seat, I'm like, food, you know, and just eating like a horse.
I'm sure you ate whatever they served once you got up, too.
Yeah, probably so. Well, but that was always
did he kind of show you the ropes a little
absolutely
bit?
Absolutely, he did. It was always a treat flying up there with Raj. You know, Raj would talk your ear off, but the stories were always great.
Oh, God, were they ever. My first experience with him was really where my first experience with just about everybody in this business was.
The bathroom?
No, the press box at Arlington Stadium.
Well, I'm just gonna always, all I can think of is Norm. Well,
yeah.
That's kind of what that sounded like.
Everywhere you go. How do I always end up in here?
But, yeah, I was at the press box at Arlington Stadium, and there you have lots of time for lots of different stories. And, man, Roger held court every single night. We would hear tales of seeing Zebra in New Orleans and Uriah Heep in Montreal. And just
never met a guy in my life that liked Zebra more than Roger Emmerich, man. Zebra! And I remember telling him, he's telling me all these stories about seeing Zebra. I'm like, dude, why are you so into Zebra?
Cause, Padna, that's the best there is.
Yeah, and you were always Padna with Roger.
Padna.
Even I was Padna.
But it was great, man. He was so nice. He was just a big ball
just
of
the
love.
Sweetest guy you could possibly imagine. And, man, this just saddens me to no end. He spent most of his years at KRLD in the Texas State Network, but he also would fill in on the morning show on KEOM every now and then. That being that High School radio station where he would roll the 70s hits in the morning.
And man,
that's the disco station.
He was a radio, maybe one of the last true radio giants where he did everything. He was all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, he could do everything. He had done everything. He was just a golden, larger-than-life personality. His son, Ted, is in the game, and boy.
Ted is great.
You think that guy's going places?
He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And, you know, Roger was so, I remember, you know, when he was a little bitty kid, Ted.
Yeah.
You know, Ted now is what, 30 something?
Yeah, 30, 31.
Yeah.
And doing the Masters.
Yeah, doing the Masters. I remember when he was so small and Roger talking about Teddy and
My boy Teddy.
He loved that kid. I mean, we all love our kids, but it was great to hear him talk about him. And whenever he was breaking into the game, into radio, I was like, man, you really think that this is a good idea? Oh, Teddy's going to kill it out there, partner. He's going to kill it. And he was right. He was right. Teddy's awesome.
He was right. He did.
And he raised... As nice a man as Big Raj was, Teddy's right there
Matt
with him.
Matt Apple
man.
Did not fall far from the tree.
He's a great, great guy.
I knew, you know, Ted, like you said, he was real young. And that's when I started in 93, Teddy was 6, 7, 8 years old, whatever.
Yeah.
And there were summers where they didn't have a babysitter available. So he would bring Ted up and Ted would be, he would get in a rolling chair and just roll back and forth in the newsroom. And poor Roger just... apologizing to everybody. Sorry, Padna. I'm sorry about Teddy. Teddy, calm down.
Man, he was one of a kind, and if you know him, you are going to miss him terribly.
Yeah, and just to know, if you want to know what that guy meant to all of us and to the people in the media, Ted posted something about him yesterday. and the laundry list of Dallas radio TV personalities that responded to Ted mm-hmm. about Raj was, man, it warmed your heart. It was really, really cool.
Yeah, he was one of a kind, and man, it's a sad day in the game, let me tell you.
He sounds to me like a guy that found his scene, found his people early on, and never took it for granted.
No.
That's exactly what he was.
And you know what? Just real quick, he was so... Somehow he and my mother-in-law had a connection. They worked out at the same place, I think is what it was. And when she told him that, oh, my son-in-law does this and that, he befriended her, and she would have stories for days about Roger and talking with Roger and how sweet he was. I mean, he was this way with everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody.
He was just a truly, truly extraordinary, one-of-a-kind cat. 62.
Too young.
Stay hard, Raj. Mm. The Raj Mahal checks out. I've been wanting to hear about this for the last couple of weeks. And I hate the fact that it revolves around your mom's funeral.
It's fine. So while I was in recovery from surgery, I'd been home about a week, week and a half. And my mother, we moved her up here about 4 years ago. This is the mother that adopted me. She was 90 years old. And the last couple of years, the health had declined so poorly and it had gone into dementia. And in the recent months, it was almost incoherent. And this was a blessing for her, for everybody.
90
years old.
It's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. She had a good run. And anyway, so she passed away on June 2nd. And I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to attend the service, which was back where I, you know, grew up in middle school and high school out in Knox City, Texas. And they pushed it back far enough that I was able to travel, and it worked out. So the plan was is to drive out. It was on a Sunday. Me and my son drove up that Sunday morning, and the plan was to meet my sister and my older brother, her birth son, at the cafe in town. So I show up, and it's about, I guess the service is about 2 o'clock. We roll in at about 12:30. And so we roll into the cafe, and the place is packed because it's after church. It's the only place to eat out in town. And I sit down at the table and with family and going through some pictures of of her family and extended family, people that I didn't know. And I'm talking to people that I don't remember and I don't know.
They know your name and you don't know theirs.
Yeah,
that's the worst.
And everybody looks different because these are people I haven't seen in decades. Well, one gentleman walks up and puts his hand on my shoulder, and I look up and I recognize him immediately. He hadn't aged a bit. And he's talking, and we're kind of, you know, getting along and shooting the S and whatnot. And he walks away, and I said, well, it's good to see you, Mr. Dillon. You know, take care. Mr. Dillon was my ag teacher that talked me into buying my pig. So this man I have not seen once.
In 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, I might have run into him a couple of times, you know, when going back for a visit here or there.
He's still in town.
He's still in town.
Is he still doing the ag thing?
Yeah. I think a lot of these guys are retired now. But he was our FFA leader or whatever. He taught ag mechanics. You know, I learned a lot from this guy. He's a great dude. I learned how to weld. I can use an oxyacetylene cutting torch and cut metal. You know,
wow.
Lots of cool rural things that you learn growing up in a small town.
Is Mr. Dillon still... Or is he aware of the fact that you've talked about your pig before?
That didn't come up.
Okay.
We'll get to some ticket recognition briefly.
Okay.
So the next interaction that I have with former faculty at the same cafe is...
How big is this cafe? Is it like a...
It probably holds about 70 people.
Okay, so it's pretty good size.
Yeah, it's a decent sized little restaurant. And, God, the portions... What you would expect.
Like eating a football?
It's like eating 7 footballs. So my aunt or second cousin or somebody goes, you know who that is sitting over there at that other table? And I looked over and I'm kind of recognize him. I go, who is that? She goes, that's Coach Underwood. Coach Underwood was my basketball coach all through middle school and high school. And when my senior year, I don't know if I ever told you guys this, but after football season, I dropped out of athletics. I did not play basketball, and I did not run track that year. I wanted to focus purely on nothing. on study hall and thinking about what I was going to do to get the F out of that town as fast as possible.
And being in Van Halen.
Yes, and being the next guitarist in Van Halen. And when I made this decision, he came to my house and made me sit in his truck for about an hour one night in front of my home and sat there and tried to debate me and convince me to not quit basketball.
How dazed and confused is this?
You have no idea.
Like it's ripped straight from the script.
Yeah. You know that you're ruining your life right now.
Yes.
Like that kind of stuff.
Yes.
You're going to end up in jail because you quit basketball. I mean, that kind of rhetoric was just on and on and on. And I stuck to my guns, and I can't believe I did it because I was very... I mean, I was by that time I was 17, you know, and looking back, I probably wouldn't have played a lot of the athletes. I might have run track, but I wouldn't have played football. It did not behoove me, and I wouldn't have played basketball because I was terrible at it. I just happened to be the tallest kid in school.
Is this the guy?
No, this isn't Bayless Snow.
It's not.
No, Bayless Snow, that was Coach Rogers, and he doesn't live in the town anymore.
Damn it.
But anyway, so he's sitting there eating his chicken fried steak, and I walk up behind him, and I kind of put my hand on his shoulder, and I lean in, and he doesn't see me. And I whisper in his ear, I go, Coach, you need a 165-pound power forward to come off the bench and get you 5 fouls and 2 points in the first half. And he looked up at me, and he goes, you know what, Bayless, I could use that about right now.
So you've not seen him in 30 years either?
It's been forever.
And okay, were they all aware of your mom? And
oh, yeah, that's why they were all there.
Okay,
they were all there.
So this is pre-service?
This is kind of an unofficial, you know, get-together of the town. I mean, it's a tiny town. There's like 800 people that live there.
Yeah.
So my final encounter with faculty, and this guy's been mentioned on the station before, and this was my favorite interaction that I'd had. And so prior to the last segment, I ran into my old ag teacher, which helped me decide to become part of FFA and buy a pig.
Brilliant.
And the other one was my basketball coach, who had an hour-long conversation with me in his truck when I chose to quit athletics after football season my senior year, very dazed and confused.
He's so, just trying to keep you on the right track, man.
You know what? And had I listened, my life might have turned out differently.
What if
I might have gone pro?
Yeah, what if you were in the NBA still?
At 6'3", as a small point guard.
Hey, they got 6'3 guys in the NBA.
Oh, my God.
And you were the center.
Yeah, I was the 5.
At 6'3".
I was the 5, bro. And I towered.
Were you the tallest kid in your class?
Yeah, the next tallest kid was probably 6.
That is awesome.
There was a couple kids. There was a 6'2", couple 6'2 guys that were in other classes.
How tall was, what was the Ted, the guy that took a dump in the shower?
Teddy Sanchez?
Yeah.
I don't know, like 5'9". I don't know why he did that.
No one does.
Were people amused by that?
No, people were kind of mad because.
Well, yes.
Yeah, there's a log in the shower. You don't want to go in there and have to work your way around that.
Idiot.
So the last interaction with faculty, wonderful service, very brief, you know, a lot of people showed up and paid their respects to mom, and it was very sweet. And afterwards, you know, me and my kid and sister, people are kind of paying their respects to us, and that's kind of what you do. You know, see the surviving family members and let them know how much you appreciated the departed and whatnot. This guy walks up to me, and I look right at him, and I'm like, oh, my God, this dude, I know exactly who he is, has not aged a bit. I couldn't believe it. And the thing that, and I was talking to my friend about this later on, well, these people are still alive and still look really good, and it made me realize that when we were in high school, these people were in their 20s and 30s, and we thought they were 50.
That's what weirds me out about, like, especially my junior high coaches, is that every one of my junior high coaches, outside of like my ninth grade football coach, was probably 24 years old.
Yeah.
And so they were about 10 years older than me. And a 10-year gap when you were 14, like you said, it might as well be 50. Those people just, I'm sure you had junior high teachers and coaches that you looked at and you're like,
sure,
my God,
and
you are so old.
Yeah.
They were in their 20s.
Your perspective is incredible. It's amazing how different your perspective is when you look back on it.
Yeah, as a kid.
So this gentleman walks up to me. I immediately recognize him. He pushes out his hand to shake my hand, and I'm smiling. And I reach out, and there I grab
the thumbless hand of Coach Verhollen, my tennis coach.
He had a tennis coach and didn't have a thumb.
As he wraps his forefinger, using that as an opposable thumb around my hand, and I look right at him and I said, Ronnie Verhollen, how the hell are you?
My history teacher was Mr. Verhollen, and he only had one thumb.
And on his other hand, it's a baby thumb. It's not even a real, fully realized thumb. Yeah. Yeah.
And he was a tennis coach.
He coached tennis, and he was a fantastic English teacher. Very much into theater, the arts. He was like the out of place, yeah, big city guy.
A little
like
progressive,
yeah, the town
for that.
Yes, the town intellectual, the town professor, a little more big city, more progressive than that small town, but still lived there. I think his parents passed away. He retired from teaching not long after I graduated, like in the 90s. He retired and took over his family's farm. They have a huge farm out there, and he runs the farm.
Wow.
Whatever they grow and livestock and whatnot. But Mr. Verhollen came up to me and we're just kind of talking and he goes, yeah. And he said, I know you're still on the radio up there in Dallas. I said, yeah. He goes, yeah. From time to time, I'll get an email from someone telling me that they were listening and heard about this one-thumbed tennis teacher that sang songs a cappella in history class. And
oh, man.
I just, you start looking at your feet. And you're like, yeah, I know. Sorry, man. I'm not trying to.
Yeah.
He's like, I get it. It's fine. I go, we're not ever making fun of you. It's just people are very interested in hearing stories from a dude that grew up, with a goat in science class.
We're just telling stories, yeah, not making fun.
That was my lab partner was a goat.
Oh, man.
But he thought it was funny. And they always get, when I go back and see those people and had in the past, especially after working up here, because they, in a small town, they think, oh, my God, you work in radio. You're famous in Dallas. Everybody must know you. So they get a big kick out of that when you come back home.